Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 19 of Security Nation. I am Kyle Flaherty. Can't believe we've banged out 19 of these in 2016 when we started it pretty late in the year. But thank you for all of the input. Certainly lately we've been getting some great feedback from folks about what they want to see in 2017 on the show, and certainly signing up as many guests as we can, especially folks, quite frankly, no offense to my colleagues who work outside of Rapid7, and that's exactly who we have today. Talk to Bo Weaver. So Bo has been pen testing since the 1970s. You know, he talks about early days, ARPANET, TCP/IP, when he's in the Navy, and he kind of takes us through, you know, during this podcast, the history of what pen testing has been, what it's turned into, and quite frankly, what it could be. His stories are practical, pragmatic. He's been there on the front lines. He's been doing a lot of this stuff, just like a lot of you guys out there who listen to this show. But we spent a lot of time talking about kind of what it means to be a pen tester, the fine line between good and evil, if you will, when it comes to that stuff, how, you know, good pen testers have to have that, you know, just discourse for being devious yet still moral. And how do you do that? And what it means when governments are cracking down on pen testers and pen testing tools and things like that. What we have to be concerned about. And that really goes into kind of the end part where Bo talks about how important it is for him, especially now with the career that he's had in pen testing, to really give back and to give more to this next generation of pen testers. And I thought that was an awesome way to end the pod. You'll hear it kind of at the end of it, and this whole idea of giving back to the community. And I guess that's one of the powerful reasons why I still love security. I know it sounds I'm not crying or getting super emotional, but I do think it's really important, and I do think it's something that we have to think about as we build on to our security prowess, whether you're a vendor, a practitioner, just someone who's out there playing around with this stuff. I think that it's something to really think about, and Bo certainly kind of made me think about it. So without further ado, please enjoy episode 19 of Security Nation.
You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
If we met in person.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So let's start kind of, you know, I think level setting and at the beginning, if you will. And then I want to get into some of the other stuff that you and I have been talking about over email. But what drove you, you know, to want to be a pen tester, get into pen testing? You know, what keeps you going in that kind of realm?
That's an interesting question. Back in the 70s, when I was in the Navy, I was in the Polaris Missiles Program, and I was got to work at that time with the most high-tech computer, especially mini computer in the world, which would have filled up a kitchen at the time. I saw the destruction of the computer, and that was the first time I saw a machine that was smarter than me, and I don't like machines that are smarter than me. I kept trying to, especially while I was even in school in the Navy, I was always trying to outsmart the computer. So that's where I did my first hacking, actually. And also, I worked on a little project while I was in school called ARPANET. And the little thing called the TCP/IP stack.
Yep.
Our school actually did some work on that. In the 80s, when computers started becoming really commonplace every day, I thought about the capacity of what a computer would do. And I'm Native American, and the thing that defeated Native American people when Europeans came were three things. Disease, number one, the use of metal, because we didn't have the use of iron, so we didn't have iron weapons, and the use of paper. We had no concept of paper, and that, you know, you have this piece of paper, so you must do what this paper says, or we have this paper, so we own this land. Especially, we had this paper, so we own this land. We had no concept of that. So that was the defeating thing. And when computers started becoming commonplace, I really saw them as to do paper. And I thought to myself, some of those Native Americans need to have a handle on this. And so I started getting back into computers and getting into how they work and also how you could get information out of them. And also a friend of mine started up a little VBS business at the time that ended up being Internet Gateway. And I started working with him as a hobby, really, just helping him out. And from there on, you know, anytime I worked around a network, I was always trying to get around things that were in there.
Yeah. And so when you, and nobody likes a computer smarter than them. I'll take a person smarter than me. But, you know, as you're kind of breaking those things down, figuring it out, and dismantling it, to use, you know, kind of a lack of a better term, what are you learning? What are you looking for? What are things that kind of help you then, you know, work to either make that a more safe network, you know, or whatnot? I mean, what are the clues that you're always looking for?
The clues I'm always looking for is like means of entry. I always have this concept that I talk to clients about, and people, anytime internet security gets brought up, is this is the way I look at networks and things. Like, if you built a block house out of concrete block, put a big steel door on it, you've got a really secure building. But the moment you put a window in that building, now all that security you built into that steel door can now be circumvented with a big size rock through that window. And so that big door and the security and all that you got on that building, it just, you know, went right out the window. And having that concept, you know, I go looking for those windows. That, and by nature, I'm a very, very honest person. But then again, there is a little bit of a criminal in me.
Yeah.
And so that's always been a big help in hacking, too.
Do you think that's interesting? So do you think, and obviously I've had the, I don't know, it's either a blessing or a curse of working with lots of pen testers over the years and sitting with them in the office or whatnot. But do you think, you know, the good ones, do you think they all have an element of that? They, you know, not to suggest, I may be reaching here, but
we're all criminals.
Yeah, right. You could have gone either way, but you had a little bit more good than bad.
Yeah, I mean, I really could have went either way, and, you know, I always laugh about it. I tell people, you know, like when the name Kevin Mitnick gets brought up, I always say, well, you know, the difference between me and Kevin Mitnick is he got caught.
Yep. That's true.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, having a criminal, a devious nature about you, but also having a high set of morals. That's what makes a white hat hacker.
Right.
And that, you know, it's just like, you know, they say that there's a thin line between genius and insanity. There's a thin line for hackers, too.
Hey, do you think that line has gotten thinner or more gray over time?
I think it's gotten a lot grayer, especially in the government sector.
Yeah.
You've got so much surveillance done by our government on our own people these days. And those guys, I've met some of those people, and they're, you know, they're really good people, and they really feel like they're doing good things. But then again, you know, the way I see it, I mean, this is an act, you know, you're committing an act of treason.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we're even seeing things at state levels and stuff like that. And Michigan actually is a good example of a state that went the other way of, you know, protecting a lot of the rights of hackers and things like that. But it's a constant battle, and it seems like it's going to get harder and harder for those of us who care about this industry to make sure that we're protected in what we're doing, and people understand that thin line, like you said, that if we don't do this, someone else is going to, and you're just not going to know that they did it.
That's right. I mean, you know, the One thing that I like about the kind of work I do, it's better for me to come in and breach your network and steal all your data because I'm going to, you know, give it back in the end.
Right.
You know, you haven't lost anything, but, you know, I have completely demonstrated, you know, what a bad, real bad guy can and will do when they get in. And especially if you've got a vulnerability that I breached, if I didn't do it, it's just a matter of time before somebody else does.
And when you go, you know, this is all, I'm always fascinated too by when, you know, after a job is done, you know, what are ways that people react when you kind of, you know, present your quote unquote findings or show that, you know, you took their data and whatnot? And what does that tell you about maybe what they're going to do with that information?
Well, it runs the gambit. And yeah, the way they react tells me how they're going to handle the information that I've given. I've gotten everything from thank you letters from systems admins to having CEOs of companies crawl down my, you know, down my back because I breached their network. And the ones that write me and, you know, thank me for the work I've done, and especially, like, there's been several times I've gotten emails back from systems administrators that were just, oh, thanking me for breaching their systems from a vulnerability that they knew about 9 months ago, but they've been trying to get management to fix it, but they didn't want to spend the money.
Hmm.
And they kept saying that it's not a problem when the systems administrator knew that it was a problem, and then I came along and proved that it was a problem. And especially now that it goes into your report for, like, PCI, now you have to fix it.
Right. Yeah,
and
that's, you know, one of the things that I wanted to kind of pick your brain about, too, was how that's changed over the years. So, I mean, you know, we've started here in the 1970s, you know, with a machine that was potentially smarter than you. And then we've moved here to 2016, you know, and obviously compliance is a big deal. Obviously, security's gotten to such a level of noise, and we can talk about that as well. But what have you seen, at least from the pen testing, you know, specific, like the evolution of that? How has it changed? What are the biggest changes you've seen since, you know, day one to day whatever it is at this point?
Biggest changes is people are aware of security. When I first started doing security work, I had my own little consulting company, and the main thing I was doing was selling firewall. I mean, this was right when companies started getting full-time connections, you know, right after dial-up, when companies actually started getting, like, T1 lines and stuff. And I was trying to sell firewalls. And, you know, people just go, well, what's that? You know, nowadays, everybody knows what a firewall is, or at least has an idea.
Sure.
Back then, nobody even had a clue. Nobody had a clue about security. And most, especially small companies, had the idea of, well, I'm small, nobody's going to hack me, I don't have anything. And at least that kind of, that mindset has went away, especially with small businesses. Small businesses are concerned about the security of their network now. So that's one big major change. Another big change I've seen is in the quality of pen testing. Well, this is kind of a two-edged sword, is the quality of pen testing tools that's out there now.
Hmm. And it's a two-edged sword because it's accessible by...
Yeah, by people like me and also by the bad guy.
It goes back to the thin line comment.
Yeah, the guy that works for the mob that's going to crack your network and steal your credit card data is more than likely using Kali Linux just like I am.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's. I mean, that's always been, you know, one of those, especially as someone who, obviously, if you're a vendor too of something, let's say like Metasploit, you know, it's something that you have to be thinking about all the time. And it is, it's a funny, like we talk about gray lines, that's a pure gray one. But I've always been in the nature of, I'd rather have access to that and have, because I don't know, maybe I'm naive and I'm being Pollyanna here, but it's like, I do think there's more people like you, you know, and I think that if we can equip more people like that, then we'll find the holes faster and be able to do that from a community standpoint. Again, maybe that's a little kumbaya, but that's always been the way, at least in the last 20 years of being in this industry, I've felt.
Yeah, that's the way I feel too, because you know I don't think there should be restriction. You know, I know that they're starting to put restriction on what they call hacking tools. I recently took a course from Offensive Security, the people that make Kali, and I had to send in copies of my driver's license to prove that I was a U.S. citizen in order to take this course.
Hmm. Interesting.
And you know, I know that with y'all's tool Metasploits, y'all have been getting into some problems with the government. Them want to classify it as a hacking tool and put some restrictions on it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you know, as much as I see it just like gun control. When you start putting control on guns, the only thing you're doing is taking the guns away from the good guys. So when you start restricting hacking tools, the only person you're restricting is the good guys. You're only restricting me because I worry about breaking the law, because if I break the law and go to jail, I no longer have a career.
Right.
And that's one thing that keeps me honest with people's data is, you know, I screw up one time, I know my career is gone, and I like my career.
Yeah.
And plus, I've got good morals.
Yep. Yeah, no, it is. It's interesting how the parallels, and it's going to be interesting in 2017 as this conversation continues, because I'm always talking to our, you know, obviously we have a great community of folks, and they're always kind of telling us what's going on the front lines there. And there's a lot of battles that are kind of brewing overall. And I think it's important that as a community, we realize that. And I'm going off on a little tangent, but you know, it goes back to kind of the noise and security. And you kind of mentioned the fact that people are now aware of it. And that certainly is a good thing. But then I also feel like the attention now being paid to security is more on kind of those detection and prevention tools. And we're not, I don't know, maybe we're not worried as much about protecting our abilities as quote unquote hackers or pen testers or whatnot to actually keep doing that. And that's where, that's the root of this entire industry. Like you got, I mean, you know, we're talking about a 40-year span here for yourself. This is important.
It is, because our whole lives are digital now. Our money is digital. I mean, when you go cash your check at the bank, your money is not in that big old vault. It's in a data center somewhere.
Right. Yep.
I know. I've worked in those data centers, so I know where your money. I know. I've seen where my money's at.
Mm. Yep. Yep. So, let me ask. You mentioned PCI, and then this is another topic that I haven't been able to really talk to a lot of folks about, but I always find it interesting. So, a lot of obviously pen testing has grown, and compliance is one, if not one of the biggest parts. Of growing the industry as a whole. But is that yet another good/bad thing? Are we relying on it for a checkbox mentality? Or is it a forcing function that at least gets us closer to safe?
I see it as a good thing, and I do see it as a forcing function. And there are an awful lot of companies that have to be forced into compliance. And the PCI yearly compliance forces these companies, like I said, I've seen a lot of companies kicking and screaming because they didn't pass their ROC. And the reason why they didn't pass their ROC was is they hadn't been, you know, proper network hygiene. And so, and that helps keep, you know, people's data, you know, especially their credit card data safe. Because as a pen tester, I see my job not really working for XYZ company. I see my job working for you or Joe Blow truck driver and your credit card data, because you know, the thing I see that I'm protecting in my job is Joe truck driver that's, you know, lives, you know, from paycheck to paycheck. And if his account gets hacked, sure, he'll get his money back, but that'll be in 90 days minimum. And that poor man's got two kids to feed while his account's frozen. Yeah, because his account got hacked, and that's the person that I see that I'm really working for and protecting their money. And because PCI does force a lot of these companies and banking institutions into playing, you know, doing the right thing.
Yeah. So and, you know, when you and I were emailing around to actually get this scheduled. One of the things that you mentioned is kind of what's wrong with our critical infrastructure, what you're seeing as a pen tester. So, you know, and I'm sure you see a lot, but what is it that maybe has your hair up on the back of your neck, or, you know, are things that at least, you know, put you on notice from that standpoint?
The big thing is, you're right, I see every kind of network. I see networks from mom and pop, two people shops, to Fortune 50 companies networks. And the thing I see that's really scary is it seems like the larger the bureaucracy in a industry, the larger the attack surface, because there's so much bureaucracy. In the smaller companies, you know, you've usually got like a 2 or 3 man team that's maintaining the networks, and they're wearing, one thing is they wear a lot of hats. You know, your systems administrator is also the security guy. And those networks are usually well taken care of, well maintained, and well hardened. But when you get up into, like, say, a financial management company or a major hospital, you've got a layer of bureaucracy between the top level and the actual IT guys that's actually doing the work. And these managers normally don't have any formal education in network management. They have business degrees. They have a degree in finance. They have an MBA. And they're the managers, and they usually get their bonus from their profit and loss statement. So they don't want to spend the money in order to show more profit. And that's another thing that's a failing thing is, you know, companies look at a profit and loss when it comes to security and the networks, and they shouldn't look at it like that. They should look at it that this is the backbone of my company. And in order to keep my company healthy, I need to keep my network healthy.
And I'm trying to, like, that's interesting because, I mean, you mentioned the smaller teams, and obviously agility might help and things like that. But the thing that you hit on that probably stuck with me the most from that perspective is IT and security are closer together, if not the same person, or at least, you know, they're overlapping so much more. So as we've kind of separated those functions, have we increased risk because of that separation?
Yes, we have. Because like I said, you know, your IT, your business managers, which are in charge of the IT, normally don't have any formal education. They've never, like, racked a server. And, you know, they wouldn't know a server if they tripped over one on the floor, but yet they're in charge of, you know, making the decisions instead of the engineer making the decision. We have to get this fixed now. And it being taken care of because the engineer said so, you have a business manager in the way going, oh, well, that costs too much. And my question every time I hear, oh, it costs too much is well, spending this $5,000, is it worth losing every bit of your company data? Is you're telling me your company worth less than $5,000?
Right.
Because if somebody gets in here and gets your stuff, you're business can be toast.
Yep. Yeah, and that goes back to
I've seen businesses go under because they got breached.
Yeah. No, I bet. And not just smaller ones, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about just the mom and pop places. I have seen lots. For one thing, your reputation goes out the window.
Yep.
And I don't care how much marketing you throw at it. Sometimes, especially with smart people, no matter how much marketing you throw at it, they're going to remember when you messed up.
Yeah. So one thing one thing we get a lot of here, obviously, and when I'm kind of out and about at trade shows or events or whatnot, are, you know, people who are looking to get into pen testing. And I'm sure you get this all the time too. What do you recommend for someone who, you know, is looking at this as a career?
Well, a shameful plug for my book.
I just wrote
a book called Cali 2 Windows Penetration Testing by Hackett Publishing. And The way we wrote, I actually co-authored the book with a friend of mine, Wolf Houghton, who's also a security researcher that I've known for 20 years now. We've worked on and off together. And the book is written to answer that question, because working as a pen tester, especially with a lot of systems administrators, you know, they always ask me, well, how do you do a pen test? You know, so I'd like to know so I could do my own, so I could be ready for when you come along, you know? So we wrote this book. It's not really a book for the, you know, the very beginner, you know, someone straight out of college. The book is written for systems administrators that want to do their own pen testing. You know, we get into the really depth of blow by blow how things work, but we don't get into things like explaining how a domain controller works on a Windows network. We assume the reader already knows the ins and outs of setting up a domain controller and all that. Main thing we show you is in several ways of, you know, exploiting that domain controller.
That's the fun stuff.
So, and we really wrote, we tried to write it like, you know, a two-person conversation, like me sitting down and having a, you know, 6-hour conversation with a systems administrator on how to do a pen test.
Yeah.
And basically the book is a PCI pen test. I mean, that's the way it's laid out, is the way I do my work.
I love
it. That's a good thing. But also, you know, people in college and stuff, I've had a lot of young people come up and want to get into security. And the thing I tell them is, you know, just take some online courses. Like Offensive Security has an excellent online course. If you pass that test, you're a pen tester.
Yeah.
I mean, that is no check mark, sit here, memorize this stuff, and then you can pass. And I don't think that there's a boot camp for their class. I mean, I don't see how. You've got to know that and get get on some of the forums that's out there, like the Cali Forum, y'all's forums. Y'all have several really good forums, like the Medicine Quick Forum. And get on those sites, do reading, and get you a copy of VirtualBox. Download some, there's a lot of, you know, Linux VMs you can download. Like y'all have Metasploitable 3 that just came out.
Yeah.
And I tell them, you know, get you a copy of that, and I scream at them, do not put it on the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I tell them, you know, load it up in VirtualBox, because, you know, it's like I jokingly tell them, that's my video game, is I'll load up something like Metasploitable or some of the OWASP testing things, and that's my video game, is I load it up, fire up my Kali, and, you know, play Hack the Planet.
Yep. No, and that's the fun.
Yeah, there's really no way to formally teach pen testing that I've seen. It's not like taking your MCSE test where you can memorize a bunch of stuff and, yeah, you can manage Windows. You've really got to think out of the box to be a good pen tester.
Yeah, I mean, it's a doing function for sure. Obviously, there's a lot of learning, but you got to get your hands dirty.
Because every network is different. Every network is good.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure you're still learning.
One thing works on one network, doesn't work on the other network.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Bo, I'm going to let you go. Just like that, we've been talking for a half hour. One thing, I'd really love you to come back, because one of the things I'd love to talk to you about, too, is just some of those stories from the front line. Obviously, those that you can share, you know, will protect the names of the innocent. But I'm sure there's a ton in there in your career, and I think that would be a really fun second episode to do.
I would love to do it. One thing you asked about education, you know, I've taken a lot from this community, and that's the way that I see this, about these talks, is right now I'm giving back for the stuff that, you know, I have taken and learned and used every day to make my living with. And so, you know, maybe this talk will inspire somebody or give somebody a little nugget of information that they can use. And that way I'm giving back to the community. That's one thing that I do like about Rapid 7 is the amount that y'all do give back to the community and the free and openness of your company. And that's one reason why, you know, I'm here talking with you today is the you know, y'all give back. And so it's my turn to give back, and y'all are helping me give back.
Well, I think that's great. And what an awesome way to kind of wrap that up, and potentially my last podcast of the year too. So it seems appropriate to be talking about giving back and making sure that we're all doing that inside of this community for sure.
Yes.
Awesome. All right, Bo, I really enjoyed the conversation. Hopefully I'll meet you in person soon as well.
Yeah, enjoying talking with you. And anytime you want to talk, just give me a buzz.
You bet. All right, we'll talk soon.
Okay, have a good day.
Bye, Bo. Bye.